And welcome back to Paul Listick Behind the Curtain, shifting gears a little bit, but to another fun musical, because we're now talking about the show Hairspray. I love Hairspray ever since it was created. I saw it on Broadway, saw it in the original national tour, and it's now playing at the Grand Theater in Highland Park from July 25th until August 3rd. It's a short run, so you got to get your tickets and do it quickly. Let me introduce you to the cast, the director, everybody who's joining us for this show. First, playing the role of Tracy, and we'll tell you a little bit about the plot if you don't know it, but if you know Hairspray, you know who Tracy Turnblatt is as well. And playing in that role is Grace Hall. This is your professional debut, so congratulations on that. What a role to step into. It's made some real stars in this, and I know you're at Northwestern right now.
I am, yes.
Good job there. And of course, you have in the past played Belle, Beauty and the Beast. So you, I know, will enjoy watching the first half of our show where we talk to Mrs. Potts. So congratulations. But we're taking you into your starring role now as you play Tracy. And playing Edna, we could argue over which of these roles is. They're pretty important to the show. But Scott Spector, this is a return to the stage for you. And you're coming back in a big way to play Edna Turnblatt.
Sure am. My last time on stage was back in 2019. I was in 1776 at the Skokie Theater. And since then, I've been primarily focusing on music, a little bit of behind the scenes live theater stuff as well.
And congratulations. And you're stepping into pretty big shoes, man, because from Harvey Fierstein and Bruce Vilanch, who have both played these roles, and I've interviewed both of them over time. I know you're going to be unbelievable because I'll be at the show, but I got to tell you. Big shoes to fill.
Oh, man. Yes, you are right.
Right. But congratulations on the role.
Thank you.
And Abraham Dietz Green, you play Link Larkin. You're one of the adorable people in the show, of course. And this is your debut as well with Uptown Music Theater. You're from New Jersey. You're a Jersey boy.
I am. This is my second production of Hairspray. I auditioned for a production of Hairspray when I was 13 at a community theater. I really wanted to play Link. I waited 2.5 hours till all the callbacks were over, and I went to the director and I said, it takes two, Link's big song prepared. And she said, all right, let's hear it. And I had 2.5 hours of nerves built up, so I think I probably cracked. And they ended up hiring a 25-year-old to play Link, but it's all the more exciting to be here now.
Exactly. And I'm glad you are. And I know you in the past have played Charlie in Kinky Boots at Northwestern. You'll have to come over. I've got one of the actual boots from Kinky Boots signed by the cast and Jerry Mitchell and all that. I collect a lot of props. Like this was my Beauty and the Beast prop. I asked her whether the Beast was missing his hand. So that was from Broadway. Anyway, we're going to talk about Hairspray. And I wanted to start with Tor Campbell, who is the director of this show and the choreographer in this show as well. Right, Tor? So you are critical. You are a Chicago-based person, which I love. You're an educator. You've done at Goodman Theater and Northlight and Paramount, so much. So, but let's talk about this show. First of all, it's been done many times. So for those who come see it at the Grand Theater, are we going to see anything different in this version of Hairspray under your direction?
For me, this show is a love letter and a battle cry. I don't believe in safe theater, especially when the world is out there burning. So Hairspray is a joy resistance for me. It's like the way to bring joy in the world that needs it at this current moment. So when you come to this show, because of my identity, I identify as a black male, I'm going to bring my lineage with me. So Mortimer isn't a fiction. She's every black woman that has taught me to walk in my power. So I don't let the black people in this show be a sidebar. They are included, and they are also a main person in the cast. And we don't shy away from the seriousness of it. So yes, we're going to have glitter, but what are you doing now to create change? So if you are not coming prepared to come to be changed, don't come to this show.
How powerful. And so Grace, I'm going to put some pressure on you, because while Tor has talked about the underlying mission of the show, and that's what I love about Hairspray, it's just fun. And the truth is, if somebody wants to come and just have fun, you're going to walk out singing a whole bunch of songs in your head. So that's there. But Grace, there is so much more to this show, and talk to me about the transformational force that Tracy is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that...
And tell us about that. I should say, tell us about the plot. There may be people watching us who say that. What is Hairspray about?
Sure. So Hairspray follows Tracy Turnblatt, the character that I'm playing in the show, and she is obsessed with this TV program called The Corny Collins Show. And through meeting new friends, meeting Seaweed, who is a black character in the show, she learns a whole bunch of new dance moves and ends up following her dreams of being on the show. And once she's there, she realizes how unjust it is that she can't take the black community who got her there with her. And so my favorite thing about Tracy is that she is learning this entire show. She's learning about herself, she's learning about love, she's learning about the realities of segregation and how she can make her world a little bit brighter. And I'm so grateful to get to do that and to get to like play this character and bring that to life. In addition to, as Tor was saying, I mean, it's Hairspray. There's a massive spectacle. The songs are beautiful. The choreography is fantastic. And also, it carries such a strong message about bullying, about segregation, and about inspiring others to be better and inviting others to be better. And I'm just so glad to be a part of it.
Scott, so you play Edna Turnblad, you're Tracy's mother. This role has always traditionally been played by a male, including in the original John Waters film. Have you thought about why it's important that, or maybe it's just tradition, I don't know, but a male in the role of this mother has always been the way John Waters has seen it. How important is that? Why is it important?
That's a great question. When Edna's casting is taken with care, it can like celebrate the fluidity of identity and challenge traditional ideas of gender roles. It can also highlight the humor and humanity in characters who don't fit in neat boxes. But in today's climate, we obviously have to be more sensitive to the difference between drag performance and lived trans or non-binary identities, and make sure that our portrayal respects that distinction between our costumer, our director, and the entire company of Hairspray. It has helped me to feel more comfortable in my own skin playing this role that is a woman. I'm playing a mother, and I am obviously a full-grown man here as well. So I just think it's very important to just take that care and do that to make sure that you're not making a caricature of a person who is trans or non-binary, and that you're really taking the care in playing that character with the heart and humility of the character instead of all yourself.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think, and it's so important. And of course, in the show, your husband Wilbur, who loves you dearly, and we said, you're both just timeless to me. And just that relationship is so wonderful to watch, and how Wilbur loves you, Edna, is just amazing. Abraham, the Link character for me, I found also intriguing. It's why I was glad you were able to join us, because Link is somebody who sort of like gets one world in the way people are seeing it, but you transform right along, and you want Tracy to win this battle.
Yeah, I think that at the beginning of the show, Link's big focus is just getting a recording contract. I think that he wants to be an independent artist and he wants to have a singing and dancing career in a way that's not tied to any person or entity. And then over the course of the show, I think what he comes to learn is that he actually has a really big platform as a teenage celebrity. And so he kind of has this choice of, do I use my platform to advance my own career, or do I use it? Do I maybe risk advancing my own career and focus more on advancing social change and helping build up other communities? And I think that that's a really hard choice that he has to grapple with.
Tor, when casts first get together and you do the table read and that kind of stuff in early days, I know a lot of directors, like to make the, let's have fun, guy. We're going to have a lot of fun doing this. And you got to say that, but I'm going back to your first answer to me. And because you got the power and importance of the message of this show, I was curious. Let me take me back briefly to the table reading. Did you all look and say, we all have a mission to accomplish in this show?
And a movement. I'm like a mission and a movement and something that will never die. Like for the battle to be equal, I feel it's going to always be as far as humans exist. But in the joy is I'm really important about joy in the room. So at first, that first read, I really brought the joy, and really checking in. So I do this thing called a tap in where we tap in and it's one thing you hope for rehearsal, one thing you're bringing and one thing you're letting go. So that way we can check into our joy first. 'Cause I feel like something as serious as this, the base must be joy first. And we have the privilege, right, to have a base of joy. So many people don't have that, but let's start with the privilege of being joyful and bringing the serious piece to life with joy and pain and happiness and giving it an ending that we may not currently get at certain times in our lives.
And Grace, doing the music in this show, I mean, everything from Good Morning Baltimore on down the line, it is great music.
It is really phenomenal music. It's such a, like, it's always been a dream of mine to get to play this role and be in this show, a lot due to the music, and also just like the joy that it inspires and how iconic it is. And also, just to shout out these lovely people here, but also the rest of the phenomenal cast of this show, we sound really good. And there's a certain drive that comes when we sing together that is just like unmatched and amazing.
Yeah,
Like,
I went. I saw last season where the company did Les Mis. I was blown away. I mean, I'm kind of like, well, here I'm up in Highland Park, whatever. And I went, or am I at Broadway in Chicago? It was really just so well done. Hey, look, unfortunately, the show has to end. But can you guys hang on with me a little bit so we can just continue to hit, carry on a little bit more conversation, which we will have on the WGNRadio.com platform, which we'll load on Monday along with everywhere else. But so thank you. So hang with us if you're listening to us and watching us on WGNRadio.com. But for those here on the TV version on WGN Plus, thanks for watching us here on Behind the Curtain. You don't want to miss Hairspray. It's at the Grand Theater, presented by Uptown Music Theater of Highland Park. Go to UptownHP.org. UptownHP.org. July 25th through August 3rd. Don't miss it. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week. And we are back on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. I'm talking to the cast of Hairspray, which is being put on by Uptown Music Theater up in Highland Park. Tickets at uptownhp.org, July 25th through August 3rd. That's the time you've got to see it. Abraham, talk to me about, this battle that Tor talks about as we go through it between people of color, whites, and all that. Look, some of us lived through that in the 60s into the 70s. You're a bit younger, perhaps, for that. But talk to me about what kind of homework. Did you do any homework so you had a good understanding of what that was like? Maybe you've just studied it over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tor sort of emphasized two types of research in this process, one of which is the historical research. So we've talked about the civil rights movement. We've talked about the Buddy Dean show, which the Corny Collins show and this show is based on. And then a second type of research, which is physical research, because acting is sort of an embodied physical process. So the day I got the call saying that I got this role, I started watching videos of Elvis and videos of the Temptations and the Beatles, to sort of try to understand, how this 1960s movement style can be put into my body in 2025. So I think putting together all of that research, is really important in terms of finding the truth within these characters and within the story.
Yeah, you've just made me feel a little old, by the way, as you started doing research about things that I lived through. But hey, what do you do? So, Scott, let me once again come back to Edna. Talk to me about the relationship between Edna and all the. There's some power players in this, right? There are some powerful women in this show. John Waters loved powerful women. Mink Stole often played a lot of roles in his films and stuff. But it's Edna, in this case, played by a man, who really is the one who's controlling, I think, pretty much everybody. Everybody has something to learn from Edna.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Edna learned so much through the entire show as well. She's so scared to leave her home because she's afraid of what people might think about her or how standing up can affect her safety. But she sees Tracy taking action, and then Edna is able to change and is able to grow from that. Edna deals with conflict from Tracy and from Velma and from Amber and from a lot of these the white characters. And throughout the show, I believe that through Tracy's story, Edna then gets to change, and Edna gets to learn to love and accept herself. And I think that it's so important. Like, if one thing that I hope audiences can take away from this is that it's never too late to love yourself, and that you can change, you can grow, and you can show up for what's right, even if you start from a place of fear or misunderstanding. And that joy and that confidence, it doesn't belong to a certain size, certain shape, or gender. It's for everybody. So really, just like, she has this whole embodiment of love deep down inside of her, but she needs to break free from all the pain that she's been caused just because of her weight gain. She's terrified to leave her home because she's gained weight. And through Tracy and through these other people, she's able to really learn how to love herself again.
Yeah, this show was written pre-Ozempic, so clearly Right, things are going on. And by the way, I'm curious, did you, Scott, did you, did all, actually, I'm going to ask everybody this question. Did you all go back and see the original John Waters movie that this whole thing is based on? You did, and Scott and Susan.
I just watched it again a couple days ago, actually, with a friend of mine. She had never seen it before. She only knew the musical. I was like,
And
oh, we
so,
got to start from the beginning.
and but what do you, by the way, what do you think if Divine saw your portrayal, what would Divine say? Would Divine go, yeah, that's where it ought to be in 2025, or would Divine say, step out of the way, I'll take that role back?
I like to hope that she'd be proud of me. I feel like I still have a little bit more work to do in digging into this character a bit more before we get up to Tech Week. But I think she'd be pretty happy with it, honestly. I think she'd be happy with the entire cast.
Yeah.
That being said, if she was to pop in, she could gladly take it for a night. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, Tor would probably say, Scott, take a night off. Divine. You're safe though, because unfortunately Divine is no longer with us. But
Of course.
yeah, right. Tor, if you are you strike me as the kind of person who might just be hanging on the back door when people are leaving the auditorium at the end. What are you hoping to hear from audience members who sat through the show? What do you want them to be talking? Do you want them to be walking out with humming the song, which we're gonna do, like the 60s? Are we gonna be doing that anyway? What do you want us to be talking about on the way out the door?
Yeah, definitely that, because I feel like this world needs more joy. So definitely that. Yes, joy is a resistance, but I also want them to question how to dismantle the system that brought us here. Start to question why this story was even told. And we know the real ending with the Buddy Dean show. He canceled the show. John Waters gave us this happy ending. So I would really love people to walk out and be like, wow, a call to action. What can I do to change the current system that we're in?
Can you just wrote, you just said they canceled the show. Once again, I'm trying to think of people who don't know exactly what you're referring to. I don't
Oh,
think it's giving too much away.
yeah. So the Buddy Dean show, and actually, when they tried to segregate it, the Buddy Dean and the producers
It's a
themselves was
dance show.
like,
It's a
it,
dance show.
thank you. Yes, it was a dance show, just like American Bandstand, but just for Baltimore. And they decided instead of segregating, they canceled it. They would rather cancel than integrate. So this is why this story is so magical to me, because that happy ending really was not there. They canceled the show. But we give this happy ending because I feel like as artists, we can take a little leeway and bring some joy into the world and hope that this is be one day the end.
You've directed a lot of stuff. I mean, as I said before, at Goodman, you're a Northwestern directing fellow at Goodman. And so many theaters do so many meaningful things. Some might think that Hairspray is on the lighter end of shows as opposed to if you're directing Purpose over at the Steppenwolf or something. But as I hear you talk, and I have to say, I'm really impressed with all of you because there aren't any of you that are talking about this show as though it's some light musical that we're going to let's do The King and I, which with all the respect to The King and I. But you all seem to get the underlying deeper purpose of what is going on here. So I'm sort of curious, Tor, when you think of the different shows you have directed, it sounds like Hairspray becomes really a prime importance. Or is every show you agreed to direct going to have this kind of powerful message that has to be teaching people something?
I will, yes, that, but that, and I will say every time I do a show, also, I feel like the universe gives me a show that is needed at this current time and this current moment. And I'm an artivist. I am a political person. So even outside of the theater, a lot of my joy is stolen by just constantly having to fight for my freedom. So this here gives me the peace that I need and the fuel to go back out in the world and continue to fight for the next generations to come.
Are there any modifications or changes that you put in the show which are intended to say, let's reflect what we're doing today? And what I mean by that is, Northlight just put up Prayer for the French Republic, which, if any of you saw that, it was a totally amazing show, 3 hours, and I wish it was five. Yeah, and there's a line in the show where and this show was written prior to current day. It was written, I think, starting back in 2017 or something like that. But and it takes place in France. But there's a line that clearly the audience thinks applies to Trump. Let's just be honest about it. And so when I interviewed that entire cast as well, and they explained to me that every single night the audience laughs and applauds to a certain line that wasn't intended to be about Trump, but clearly to every audience it is, meaning because we live where we live today. Have you done anything in this production tour to basically say, I want the audience to get that this message is not about 1960, it's about today?
Yes, there's a couple of them. I'll give you one Easter egg. First of all, I feel like the cast is so, we get serious. So like I said, I don't believe in safe theater. So there's times where the room is just uncomfortable when we talk, which is, I think, is what's needed There's never a time where everybody's just comfortable in the world. And then number two, at the end of Act One, the protest scene, I have really dived into what the protest looks like. So there's this song, Big Blonde and Beautiful, and it's almost an irony because she's singing about this great song, but the protest is happening. People are fighting. There's tear gas. There's police. There are people being arrested. And on that particular scene, instead of honing on the happiness, I really honed in on the protest of that scene. And the ending is much more thought-provoking than it usually is staged.
Well, and so I'm guessing, because the show hasn't quite opened yet, but you're expecting the audience to have its moment and connect.
That's the hope, correct.
Yeah, Color Purple going on at Goodman now, and I sort of feel that
Yes.
same thing. And how it's directed, and Lillian Brown, who directed this version. If you haven't seen Color Purple at Goodman, go see it, because you'll walk out. It's a great show anyway, but this particular one blew me away, and it's because of the strong women who are clearly, that's the emphasis. And this show has strong women and Tor, and I know your schedule is a bit tight, but I just have to ask you, is there a reason you think John Waters made people of color the heroes and the strong people in this show overall? Waters is a white guy.
I think he was out to tell truth of meaning giving a spotlight to people that don't are not often seen or heard. So Tracy is very, because if she's overweight, the black people that are black are always the others. So I think he was out to tell the truth. And the truth is we are all equal. The truth is everybody has the right to shine, and us shining does not take away somebody else's shine. So that's what I really like about this thing. It's like, yes, I can let you shine, but that has nothing to do with how powerful I am as an individual. So I can tell somebody else's truth, and I can still be a shining individual and use my shine to let somebody else's shine glow.
Thank you for that, Grace. I have to ask you, I mean, I've talked to a lot of directors of a lot of shows, and Tor is just different. He's just coming at this in such a deep and different way. So let me come to you and ask you, working with him versus other ones you've worked at, perhaps at Northwestern and stuff, is he as different as I think maybe you've experienced?
Oh, totally. I think that for me, stepping into this role, especially I'm young, it's my professional debut. I'm still in
And we hate you for
school.
that.
Thank you.
No, I'm kidding.
No, but just because this is a beast of a role to step into, especially as somebody, something we've been discussing in rehearsals is we all take our identities with us. I am a fat woman who's playing this role. And also, like, I am beautiful and I see beauty all over me, like, all over, like, this show and this world. And I think that that's something that has been welcome and encouraged in the rehearsal room. Thinking about, like, Scott, too, and playing Edna, I think that Tracy's strength is that she sees how beautiful everyone is and how great they can be. And she refuses to accept that that's not the case. Like, I think, yeah.
And what I'm also hearing is you're connecting your views of who Grace is, and you're seeing the, I mean, you're clearly relating to Tracy. I mean, it sounds like Grace is not just playing Tracy, you're embodying Tracy.
I think there's some elements of that, but also I think that we are different people. Also, Tracy's 15. Like, all of the young ensemble members of this show are very young, like they're sophomores in high school and making all of these decisions and sometimes making mistakes. Something that I've really focused on, specifically with the end of Act One in the protest scene, is it's Tracy's idea to sort of do this protest and try to integrate the show, and she doesn't really think it through. Like, it's more complicated than she realizes because she thinks everything can be so beautiful. And can be so, like, of course it's gonna work out because it has to. I think that since she brings in that energy, which is similar to how I think, but she's also naive. And the consequences of that are what bring us into Act Two. And things do, well, you'll have to see the show, but things eventually improve and get better. But it's because she listens and it's because she grows. And I'm just glad to get to do that.
Amazing. Abraham, how does Link view all of these groups, people who are coming in the club. You know, we know that the true story of Torah telling us, like, hey, this never happened because, you know, but we're going to give this a happy ending. Who is Link? How does he view? Does he care about? I mean, he's a white guy in the show too, but put him back in the 60s. Did he feel loved? Is he like Tracy? He takes to Tracy, but does he kind of go through a metamorphosis?
I think he does. I think in a lot of ways, the first idea, the first time that Tracy mentions, hey, why don't we integrate this show? In fact, Link and I are willing to put our careers on the line and maybe risk getting kicked off of the show for the sake of making sure that we're pushing forward an agenda of integration. He says, no. He says, that's a bad idea. He says, like, I've been working for 3 years to try to advance my career and I've been waiting for my big break and I'm not willing to give that up. And I think then, as the show progresses, not to spoil too much here, but I do think that he does, as you said, have a metamorphosis and he does change his tune on that and realize that part of what it means to have a platform and to kind of have the teen ear is that he has a responsibility to make choices that are going to affect change for the better in the world. And I think that part of what I've talked about with Tor and what I hope happens when audiences come to see the show is that this idea, to put it into language that we might use today, is that journey of sort of understanding what his white privilege means and so and how his skin color and his body size affects how he moves through the world and the opportunities that are afforded to him and maybe not afforded to other people that he's been interacting with and that the audience is getting to see. How all of that takes place and how that shapes how he moves through the world and the responsibility that it gives him to fight for change for not just himself, but also for other communities.
Scott, are you as impressed as I am about? I mean, you're working with a lot of young people in the show. By definition, that's the cast of the show. Somebody come in, and I'm just listening to these two folks, and you actually have another cast member, Matt Angelacolo, who is who is he's an understudy. I know whatever, but I interviewed him. He did he was Javert, Jean Valjean in Les Mis during COVID, and it was this online thing. And he blew me away with just his voice and whatever. My point is, when I talk to folks who are of an age less than mine, sometimes you get people who are just sort of, you know, I'm a budding actor or whatever kind of a thing. I'm really impressed with the depth of character of you folks who I'm meeting here. So I'll go to Scott and give me the broader range. I'm guessing that the way this show got cast, everybody is of a similar ilk and having some really deep meaning. It's not just about being an actor, it's about telling a story and sending a message. It sounds like Tor requires that of you.
Yeah, definitely. And not having not done a show in the last 6 years, this has honestly been a bit of a struggle for me. I am 35 years old, and I'm in a cast with a whole bunch of 20-somethings and some teenagers, and a couple people older than me, a couple people a little bit younger than me. But for the most part, I've got a lot of these really young, really talented, really thoughtful actors around me. And I guess in being my 30s, I also have become a bit more ignorant to some of the ideas of what's happening in the world today and basing them back to the past. And I would really, I mean, I thank the younger people in the cast for kind of opening my eyes. And like, I think to myself, like, oh my God, I'm the old guy learning from these young kids. When in all reality, like, I'm in my 30s. Like, that's really, it's not old, but
No.
but from Tor's ability to see the potential of everybody and to know what's going to be happening, it's been an incredible experience to be able to really learn from everybody and to like incorporate what I see in other people's behaviors, both on and off stage, into my character and to my understanding more of everything.
So I have to ask the question. I'm sure viewers are wondering, what brought you back? Why now? Why this show? Or maybe that is the answer to what brought you back.
Yeah, honestly, my dear friends Whitney and Holly texted me asking me if I'd be interested in auditioning for this part. And it was always a dream. But honestly, in not doing a show in so many years, I was like, there's not a chance I'm going to get this. So I submitted. I took the chance and I was called back and I read the scenes, sang the songs. And yeah, I mean, like, this is one of those dream roles. It's a role that before this, I had seen one of my dear late friends, Frank Roberts, play this part many times. And he passed away just about a year and a half ago. And to be able to do this now with him, unfortunately, not here physically to see it happen, but to know that like his portrayal is living through me as well. It's almost like I'm hoping that I get to do him proud because this role is a beast, also very much like Tracy. And I mean, I'm making these Beauty and the Beast
references, which is appreciated in the first part of the show, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, and like, I'm not a drag performer. I've never done drag before, but like now you like look and you're like, oh, here are my heels. Like any chance that I have, I throw my heels on so I can practice You Can't Stop the Beat a little bit more. Or I put my dress on, my rehearsal dress, so I can feel what it's like to have that flowy dress feel. It's all stuff that I don't know and I'm not used to. So like, this has been such and I'm not sure what the word is, but it's been such like a challenge that I'm so proud of facing and that I've just continued to see myself grow from. And I remember back when I was in sixth grade, seventh grade, doing my first play, I got the bite. Like I was bit by the theater bug. And now I feel that happening again. I see there's auditions for Shrek coming up. And I see there's auditions for this coming up and that coming up. It's like, oh, well, it looks like I have to audition for a whole bunch of stuff again because I feel like that bug is now inside of me. And being in this role, which is also the largest role I've ever played, the biggest role I've ever played, it kind of gives me that motivation and the encouragement to know that, like, I know what I'm doing. And I've always known what I'm doing. I just have to continue to work hard to keep on building it up and keep on trying out and not give up.
I relate. Every time I see Fiddler on the Roof being put up, I went, oh, God, I want to be Tevye.
Oh, my gosh, I want to be Tevye so bad. Give me another 10, 15 years and it's mine.
Well, Music Theater Works has got that coming up in August. So we'll,
they sure do.
Yes, I almost went out and demanded the role, but I can't get up to Skokie every night. and just one other thing, Scott, are we going to get I don't want to give things away, but there's Hairspray Cans. There's various things in the Broadway show that are significant props. Things happen, costume changes, a whole litany of things. Are we going to see that? I have a different question for you because Grace, you're nodding. So we're seeing that stuff?
Oh yeah, definitely. There is a lot of, I remember the first day that we were running with Photo Fog, which we're using for Hairspray. And it was just amazing because I have this moment where I go and I, apologies, hold for the train that's right behind my house. But I remember the first day running with Photo Fog as Hairspray. It was our first act one run through and I was just given a can and I was like, can this happen? Like, am I allowed to? And our assistant director, Zach, our assistant choreographer, Zach, just looked at me and went, yes. And I sprayed my head all over in the scene where I'm talking to the bathroom mirror. And it was so exciting. And like the first time they ran It's Hairspray with cans and I came into the room to just like this haze in the air. It seemed so real. And also our costume designer, Ben, has been phenomenal. So excited to get to wear all of the amazing pieces that he's
brought. Oh, I love that. I can't wait to see it. And Scott, one other last thing I did want to follow up with you on, which is the notion of the singing. You know, Bruce, if the people who have done this, Harvey, whenever, it's not exactly, some people wonder, why did Harvey Feinstein get the role? Because he wrote the book. But at the same time, gravelly voice, Valanche would not describe himself as a singer, whatever. Is Scott a singer? Or would you say, no, I'm going to fall in the category of these guys who just, you know, can sing, but I'm in it because of the role. I mean, is that making sense? I mean, is Frank Sinatra did not play Edna?
Yeah, I studied classical music at Millikan University. So I am a classically trained musician, but I also recognize the importance of changing my voice a little bit for Hairspray. So you're going to hear a little bit more like this, you know, if I got that gravel with it. And through my classical training, I've been able to do that in a healthy way as well, where I'm not hurting myself. But there's also some moments where I get to pop right out and let my true voice come out and soar. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. And you get those moments. I'm just, even your speaking voice, I'm getting a sense. Do you do opera, sort of tenor? What are you in opera?
Yeah, I'm a baritone bass. I sing a lot in churches, a church musician, a lot of classical music, but any chance I get to sing anything, that's the joy of a classical training, is that you kind of can do whatever you want. And your voice, it was able to kind of manipulate it to fit how you'd like it.
I love it. And Abraham, you said you tried for this role before. You didn't get it because they didn't know what they were doing. I said that. You didn't say that. But my question for you is now that you're in this role, you're getting ready to take the stage at the end of the month. Is this what you, is this like, yes, I'm happy. This is what I want to do. They should have cast me the first time.
They definitely made the right choice the first time. I think I was way too young, not really. But yeah, I mean, really, this is sort of my first, I graduated college a month ago, actually 3 weeks ago. And thank you. And so this is sort of my first more formal foray into the professional Chicago theater world. And it's just really been such a wonderful experience. I think that it's really affirmed for me that this is sort of the path that I want to go down.
Well, I thank you all for spending time with me and Tora as well. As I said, I was a bit pleasantly surprised. And by that, I mean, I'm just this conversation for a show, Hairspray. You all took it deeper and in a more meaningful way, which is where I love to live. But at the same time, I don't often find cast members go that way and stuff. But clearly you all belong in this show and get the importance of the show. And I think that means that audiences who sit through this show are going to get more out of the evening than just saying, oh, I love Hairspray. And isn't that fun? They're going to realize that there's something important going on here. And Tor would say, darn right there is. And so that's important. I thank you all for being with me. Let me remind our viewers and listeners here on this version of it that the show is playing from July 25th to August 3rd. It's such a short run. Why don't you demand another few weeks? Would you just demand?
You know, we have five shows the second weekend. So the second weekend is a Thursday, Friday, two Saturdays, and a Sunday. So that's
it's sort of like a week, it's like an eight-show week.
It's almost like a third weekend.
Okay. See how he was ready for that one? I love that. Presented at the Grand Theater at Highland Park High School. I've been in that space. Again, when they did Les Mis there, I'm like, wow, how did that, you know, that's, it's just, if you haven't been up to Highland Park, or I'm going to say this to listeners and viewers, or you think your expectations won't be high because we're somehow, you're wrong. The quality of the shows that have been put on by Uptown Music Theater, because I've seen them, it's stunning and it's really stellar and it's really the best in the community coming together. July 25th through August 3rd. But get all information by going to uptownhp.org, uptownhp.org. This show is about understanding, about standing up, about supporting each other. It's so important. And I thank you for spending some of your time with me. Break legs, everybody. And I appreciate you being with me.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All right.
And we'll see you next time here on Behind the Curtain.